We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On our Westar Hotline, it's Thursday, it's 9:30, we're pretty close on time. That means we chat fantasy football with Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports. He is joining us right now. Scott, it is Howard and Jeremy. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and I want to go on the record as saying, I know this is a little bit divisive, but I love when the U.S. Open is impossible. There are so many PGA Tour setups where it's just too easy. And occasionally you see that at a major. I think back to the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, where just the scoring was crazy. Minus 16 won the tournament, and it didn't feel like there's a lot of tension in a lot of the shots. I hope if par is a winning score or over par this week, I'll actually be very happy. That's the type. I like to see the players struggle and have to hit creative shots.
The one thing I would say about that, I don't disagree when it comes to the rough. I want them to be able to stick greens, though. Like, to me, that is important. Way back, where was it? Maybe Shinnecock a few years back, or I don't remember, because I want good shots to be rewarded. Mm-hmm. And if you hit in close to the pin, you know, these greens are going to be fast. It's still going to be tough. So I agree with you. Generally, it's not bad to see struggles and creative shots. I just want the good shots to be rewarded. And sometimes the greens can be such that it gets gimmicky and really bad. So
that's fair. I think that's what Phil was trying to do with stick handling commentary, right? Where, you know, the ball's rolling off the green and he decided just to turn into a
bubble
saver. And, you know, he said, I'm going to be Jack Eichel for the next 10 seconds.
That was funny.
Yeah. Scott, I have a question, fantasy question for you. I was talking about this with Howard yesterday. You know, there are a lot of different formats, and maybe you can actually help me with this. The one undiscovered wilderness is the guillotine bidding process. What to do, because every league is going to have different guys available on waivers. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. You know, you've got a $1,000 budget in the league that Howard is supposed to be in. He's not, and our producer Brayton is.
Okay.
Travis Kelce went for $500 of a $1,000 budget. Mahomes went for $400. It's like the Wild West. It's chaos, and it's hard to figure out any sort of strategy, but at the same time, it's electrifying and fun. So I don't know. Like, if you've got any thoughts on the guillotine rules to live by or what can you do? Because every league and every team is so different.
Yeah, I mean, fantasy, I always say that it's all contextual is the assumed tagline to everything we say, because people ask questions and I give an answer and then they say, well, wait a minute, in my league, it's different. We play this way, that way. And obviously the guillotine format and heads up, just a nod to Paul Charchian, who I believe came up with that format. I've actually never played in a guillotine league, but I've heard a lot about them. And I think next year I might just have to play in one just so I can answer these questions better. And, you know, every once in a while one pops up on Twitter. But just speaking more generally about fab strategy and bidding strategy, I believe in the idea of selective aggression, that you can't be afraid at a poker table. You don't. It's kind of scary to think, okay, I might be going all in on my next hand, or I might have to make a really aggressive move. But if that's the shot that's called upon, you can't be afraid to do it. So I would, in a format like that, you obviously it's so specialized. It's kind of hard to give a great answer to it. But and again, I'll try to play in a format like that next year so I have better answers. But I don't. The idea I'm going to hold back and I'm going to have all this leverage later on, I think that's misguided. I think if you see good opportunities early on in free agency, or, you know, like maybe in a regular league, maybe your running backs weren't so strong and Malcolm Brown was available and you think he might be the Rams feature back, which sure looked like that in that game against Dallas, I wouldn't mind making an aggressive pass for Malcolm Brown. In a deeper league where I needed some running back help, we saw the Colts lose Marlon Mack. We know Phillip Rivers loves to throw to his running backs. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor was owned already in every league, and in his stock, he'd be a first-round pick if people were drafting today. But I made an aggressive bid on Nyheim Hines, thinking he could be like an 85-catch running back and maybe get 40% of those touches. And the funny thing is, I bid about 40% of my fab money. It wasn't even enough. Somebody went higher than that. But yeah. So don't be afraid. Selective aggression. If you think there's a good opportunity in front of you, remember, if you're right now, you get the most possible benefit. You know, people who picked up DJ Chark last year in week one, they got 3 months of fantasy goodness out of it.
That's the way I think about it when it comes to the free agent budget is, you know, whichever format, guillotine or regular, it's like you're paying for an extra draft pick today. And think of how much that could be worth to you because, like you said, like 14 weeks of whoever this player is. In our league, Austin Eckler was in the guillotine available. And I thought, I looked at his average draft position and his average auction value and thought, well, it's probably exactly the same minus 1 week. Or maybe, you know, you're down on him because of how the Chargers looked. But I like what you say about the general idea of what to do with your free agent budgets because by the time you get to week 10 and 11, how many secrets are there? Every handcuff is scooped up, and the best you're doing is maybe trying some sort of daily play. It seems like the waiver budget conversation or the stress is kind of in the first 5-6 weeks of the season. Would that be right?
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen is your strategy and the way you shape your bids is going to change. Your early bids, when you might throw in a big bid on somebody, is going to be based on what just happened and what's just been revealed. And when you run out of leverage and when you're not one of the teams that has the hammer later in the season, you won't be able to have the benefit of those types of bids, and you'll need to be more speculative. You'll need to be more a week ahead on things. Maybe you're looking ahead on the schedule, or maybe you're just saying, okay, who only needs one tiny break to have a major change in their fantasy value? And that's something I try to do every week. Right before they kick off, sometimes it's a Saturday or Sunday morning, I try to say, okay, who's on my waiver wire right now who only needs the tiniest break before they could explode? You know, I know Darrell Williams looked very ordinary in the Kansas City opener, and Edwards-Helaire looked terrific. But you might ask yourself, well, what if Edwards-Helaire got hurt? What kind of player would Darrell Williams be in that offense? And then obviously that's a very common fantasy strategy to have that backup. Yeah, Pollard in Dallas, interesting. Chase Edmonds in Arizona, if anything happened to Kenyon Drake. I mean, I think most people are hip to that type of stuff. Look at what Benny Snell did, who was not widely owned into week one. Connor got hurt again, and he's had an injury history. And Snell sure looked terrific. He came to camp in a lot better shape his second year. He looked kind of like a ham and egger in his first season, but it's a fair question to ask yourself, who is the best Pittsburgh running back right now? I wish I had the foresight. I actually had a couple of Snell shares in deeper leagues, and it wasn't that I had any insight on him. It was just the idea that maybe Connor could get hurt. But I was really pleasantly surprised at how good Snell looked in that Monday night game.
We're with Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports, our regularly scheduled Thursday fantasy football segment. From week one, surprises, disappointments. Let's start with the surprises. What really caught you by surprise from a fantasy standpoint after the opening set of games?
I'm not proud to say that I was thinking DeAndre Hopkins would need adjustment time in Arizona.
Really?
And
okay.
Maybe he wasn't. Maybe, I mean, he's a terrific player. He's been one of the best receivers in fantasy. I think over the last 3 years, if you add up all the points, he has the most receiver points. I mean, we all know he's a good player, but so often you see receivers change teams. I was wondering what we'd see from Stephon Diggs' first year in Buffalo, and he had a bang-up game, obviously. Allen had the first 300-yard game in 6 years in Buffalo, which was nice to see. But I thought the idea in Arizona would be spread it around, and maybe Hopkins would be an 80 or 90 catch receiver, but not 110. And man, they just peppered him like crazy. So that was one thing I think I'm going to already take the loss on. Also, we saw a lot of running backs who we weren't sure if they would catch the ball or not. Like Jonathan Taylor did not catch the ball at Wisconsin, but they've apparently coached him up because I think he had 6 catches. I think it was Hines at 8, Taylor at 6, and Mack, before he got hurt, got 3. So Phillip Rivers somehow completed 17 passes to his running backs. And as anybody who owned Austin Eckler last year knows, you know, Rivers loves to do that. I was really surprised that Eckler only had 1 catch. For all these running backs who were getting unusual work in the passing game, you know, even Adrian Peterson, who famously is not a receiver, caught three passes in week one, but it was Eckler, who might be the best receiving back in all of football. He hit 20 touches, but it was 19 carries and just one reception. You know, Tyrod Taylor, as you guys know, a lot of times he doesn't like to throw those passes to running backs. They turn into Taylor scrambles. So you have to wonder if Eckler's PPR value is going to take a hit.
Flip it around. I know the Browns are playing tonight. There's a lot of talk about Odell Beckham. He didn't have – I mean, at least they played against a really good defense, but he didn't have good numbers in week one. Who were the most disappointing fantasy plays from last week?
Yeah, one of the toughest things to do, like with that Baltimore-Cleveland game, is you have to ask yourself, to what degree is this Baltimore's really good, and to what degree is this that Cleveland's in trouble? And I feel like when I watch Mayfield and Beckham, it looks like they just met 5 minutes before the game. There's no cohesion. There's no rapport there. You can see Beckham's getting frustrated by it. He did draw a couple of pass interference calls in that game, and of course he was open. People always say this, like, well, he was open on a couple of passes, and you know, Mayfield didn't see him, or Mayfield, you know, missed on the pass. I feel like you could play that game with every receiver who had a disappointing game. At some point, they were open, and the play didn't go to him for whatever reason. But I'm glad I don't have shares of Beckham. I'm not confident it's going to work. And the thing with Mayfield is, you know, he was at Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley. And with CeeDee Lamb and Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown, I mean, they're just set up so well to put up passing stats there. And even after Mayfield won his Heisman Trophy, Kyler Murray was the next starter. He won the Heisman Trophy too. I'm wondering to what degree Mayfield may have been, not that he's a terrible player or anything like that, not that he couldn't be fixed or repaired. It's hard to blame anybody who had to play with Hugh Jackson and Freddie Kitchens. I mean, those guys were so far over their head. And maybe nobody could succeed. And Mayfield actually did have a good rookie year. We have to say that too. But the setup in Oklahoma was so good. I think it's an open question that we have to say, how good really is Baker Mayfield? Right now, he's not in my circle of trust. And another offense I'm worried about, Drew Brees used to be the perfect marriage of volume and efficiency. And in the last couple of years, they've become more balanced on offense. Mm-hmm. He's no longer the 650 passes a year guy. You know, they want to run the ball a lot more than they ever did before. Now he has no Michael Thomas. He's 41 years old. I know the Saints won that game in week one, but Brees only averaged 5.3 yards per attempt, and now there's no Thomas for a few weeks. I have Drew Brees outside my top 20 in my quarterback rankings this week. I can't remember ever feeling that way before.
Wow. Hey, before we let you go, you are a Lions fan. So, man, we were talking about this week. Jeremy and I were both going into the season thinking, hey, watch out for the Lions. Like, I think we even brought it up with you. Maybe they'll be good. Another blown fourth quarter lead. And as a Lions fan, I'll bet you loved hearing Matt Patricia say, fourth quarter leads? I think I had a defense that made a big play in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. It's good to be a Lions fan these days.
Well, it's an open question of who's going to be filling out their resume first, Adam Gase or Matt Patricia. You know, it's funny how many coaches are under the Belichick tree. And I think the only thing they learn from Belichick sometimes it seems like is to be antagonistic with the media. I feel for Matt Stafford because he did everything he needed to win that game without Kenny Golladay. He obviously threw the perfect pass to Swift, and I think Swift was concerned about his spot in the field. Maybe he was afraid he was going to be out of bounds or somebody was going to lay the wood to him, and he just, you know, thought too much. You look the ball into your hands, perfect pass. It's frustrating sometimes. I don't think the Bears are a particularly good team. Trubisky did play very well in that fourth quarter, but he played awful for the first 45. I actually think the Giants plus the points are the way to go in week two. But Matt Patricia's, you know, some guys are hard to like. I know football coaches in general can be distrustful. That's why I appreciate it when somebody, and you guys were so lucky all those years with Marv Levy, who's just, you know, wonderful with the media and a really solid guy. But, you know, Matt Patricia, for some reason, just views everybody outside of his circle as an enemy, and it gets kind of old sometimes.
Yeah, some coaches are like that. I think, I don't know, not to get into a deep discussion on coaches, but the idea of the media, and either you're for us or you're against us, and it's just kind of a whatever. I've learned to live with that concept. Well, I hope you have a good, productive fantasy weekend, Mr. Pianowski. You can follow Scott, by the way, on Twitter, @Scott_Pianowski, and you can read his work at Yahoo Sports' website, sports.yahoo.com. Thank you, as always, for giving us some time on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.